Hey everybody, this is Albert Escobedo, your host for the Pet Peeves podcast. Just asking if you like my podcast, if you're enjoying the content and what you're listening to, become a sponsor. Find the link on the Anchor, the sponsor link on my Anchor website, and or on the SoundCloud website. Wherever you find the descriptions for these episodes, you can find the link to become a sponsor. For $1 a month, $5 a month, $10 a month, help the podcast grow. Thank you guys very much. Thank you for listening. Bye. Thank you for listening to the Pet Peeves podcast, hosted by me, comedian Albert Escobedo. I am a registered veterinary technician and not a doctor, so please consult your private veterinarian before taking my advice. Thank you and enjoy the episode. Pet Peeves podcast with Michael Beagley.
Hey everybody. Back for some more Q&A.
Q&A episode number two.
That's right, everybody. Welcome back. We are back here for Q&A episode number two. I'm Michael Beagley, a producer, and we are here with registered veterinary technician Albert Escobedo. And
I have a license.
Your favorite Los Angeles comic. And we've got a lot of great questions today. And so let's, it's springtime. And I think we're all seeing a lot of pets out in parks and out in the world. And so let's get to it, Albert. What do you say?
Yeah, I'm ready, man. This is awesome. I love answering the questions. I think I'm getting a lot of positive feedback from the first episode. So I think this is a really great format for us and for everybody to get like the information that they're looking for, top search questions on the internet, Google helping us out. Yeah, so let's do it, man. Let's keep answering the questions.
I think this episode is going to be really fun because there are fewer serious questions. So I think we're going to get into it. So hopefully you can give us a little bit of like your professional advice, but the questions are, they're not quite absurd questions, but they're a little bit lighter questions.
So cool. I'm with the light.
We got some heavier stuff last night, like bed bugs, lice, you know, COVID.
Mental health.
Mental health. It was heavy, uh-huh. You know?
Yeah. Okay, great. The lighter side of things.
So here we go. First question. What's the best way to pet a cat?
The best way to pet a cat. That's a good question. I like this question because just yesterday I was walking my dog and I see a cat in a bush and I want to pet the cat. I'm like a kid inside. I want to pet the cat, but I don't want to scare the cat. I have my dog with me. So I know that it's like tricky how to approach this cat. So I let my dog, like my dog, it doesn't really care. My dog is used to cats. So the dog kind of goes in the opposite direction to sniff a tree or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I just slowly reach my hand out to the cat, like literally, like they tell you, reach mm-hmm. your hand out, back of your hand, let them sniff your fingers. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. And the cat, sure enough, like was hesitant at first. And I just didn't make any quick movements. And then the kitty was in the bush and literally stuck its head out to sniff my hand and then let me pet it. And then I just walked away. And that was it. That was the whole interaction. I got what I wanted out of it. I wanted to meet the kitty because I'm sure I'm going to see this cat again. It's in my, like, my rotation.
It's in your sphere.
In my dog's laps, the walking laps. So I'm like, I'll see this cat again. So I want the kitty to know that my dog is cool and that I'm cool and that we could be friends. Cause that's how my mind works when it comes to all animals, but cats in particular. I think most of the time a cat outside probably isn't going to let you approach it if you're moving too fast or if you're being too loud. But if it's used to people and people feeding it, then that cat will probably, if you have the right speed and the right energy, probably let you come at least a little bit close to see if you have any food. And if you don't, maybe that will be the end of the interaction. But with cats, I would say just generally is the question with cats, right?
What's the best way to pet a cat? Is the exact question.
Yeah, with cats. Yeah. Slowly, just move very slowly. And if any signs of aggression, don't try to pet that cat.
Yeah.
It's just like with any other animal. Like if it doesn't want you to pet it, it's going to show you by not coming to you. You shouldn't be reaching at animals. You shouldn't reach over their heads. Cats don't, if they can't see you, that's not a good thing. They're going to be scared.
And don't cats, speaking of sight, don't they have like, isn't their far away vision better than their close up vision?
I don't know.
Because they're predators. Like they can see prey a little bit further away, but like up close, they don't have the greatest vision.
I don't know because they can get
I
like
stumped
mice.
The teacher. Is that what I did?
Well, they can get mice. Yeah, can those are pretty mice. Small yeah. and they're pretty close to yeah. them. I've seen my cat catch bugs and stuff. So I mean,
my cat
I don't
can
know
catch
she,
bugs for sure.
Yeah. So I mean, they got to be able to see far and near. I don't know which one is better. I know yeah. they have pretty good night vision. But with petting the cats, I'd say in general, slowly. And if they show any signs of aggression, hissing, or you know, their hair stands up, or if they're just backing away from you,
the pine cone tail. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. The tail fluffs up. They try to get bigger. They arch their back. Any of that Halloween cat stance. Don't pet them.
I think it's interesting that this is the question. What's the best way to pet a cat? Because the thing about cats is, so I'm a cat owner of 3 years. 3 years? 4 years? Anyways, I'm losing track of time. I mean, it's COVID time, right? Everything's weird now.
What's time?
When I was growing up, we were dog owners pretty much my whole childhood. Mm-hmm. And so I thought I was a dog person. Turns out I'm a both person. And both person is the best way to be, by the way. Unless you have a terrible allergy, be a both person. Because they're both, I mean, I think you can agree, they're both incredible animals and incredible animal species with so much to offer. And they are truly different. It is really absolutely. Garfield and Odie. Like they are very different from one another.
Very different.
And the whole cats are smart and dogs are dumb. Not quite. There are intelligent dogs and dumb cats, you know, but cats have a reputation of being standoffish. Cats have a reputation of you need to earn their love, and dogs have a reputation where that's like easy to meet a stranger dog. And I don't think this reputation is, it's like any stereotype. It's not exactly fair. It can summarize things up quickly, but I think there's so much nuance. And now that I've owned a cat, two cats, they really do warm up to you. And you can meet a stranger cat if you've got the good technique. You talked about this technique. And for those of you that are listening to the podcast, you're missing out on this. So I've got a technique where my hand, you can see my fingernails up and it's kind of cupped. When I offer it to a dog, to a cat, heck, I did this to a horse. And it's just, I was taught this because it shows that even if you're not holding food, they know what's inside your hand. And so I've heard that it's even, this is good. This is the one that you showed me a second ago, which is like your fingernails are pointing down and your hand is limp. And this is pretty good, but I heard that this one's even less threatening. But at that point, if you show a limp hand, you're not showing a fist, and you're not showing a flat hand that can smack. You're showing that you are docile. And I think
the whole thing is that you're just letting them smell your hand, back of your hand, front of your hand,
your
fingertips. Like to me, they're just smelling your fingers.
It's a smell thing.
Your fingers, they smell like you. They smell if you have food. They smell like where you've been. Like, you know, they smell each other's butts. They're smelling our hands. Our fingers are our butts.
No, exactly. The butt that made me think of the butts thing. Like it really makes sense. Wow, I thought it was more that they were worried you were going to smack them and hit them or something like that.
I mean, I'm
like
sure that's for some, like for some animals that maybe have been traumatized or have been hit, that's something. But I don't think that's the majority of animals out there. I don't think the majority of animals you come across are getting beat by people. I think that's probably more rare.
Yeah. I mean, I think you get that in adoption circles. Sometimes you get like a traumatized dog. So my brother and his wife have a greyhound from the track. They rescued their greyhound from the track. Greyhound was in the, you know, in that sport properly, has papers, has a pedigree, all that stuff, raced, that they have the racing record and everything. And that dog's a bit traumatized, quite skittish, you know? And it's interesting. I met the dog over the dog's mini over the, over Christmas break. And my brother was telling me, and his wife was telling me that Minnie made true strides, socializing, because she was like really standoffish with so many people, including my parents, including people she'd met multiple times. And talk about not a cat, but you have to give like cat-like patience.
Yeah.
Day after day after day of getting them used to you until Minnie warmed up to us. And it was interesting as far as petting, a lot of people, when a dog is lying down on their bed, a lot of people will reach their hand towards the dog without thinking twice. Mm-hmm. And they had to tell me, no, this bed is basically a cage in Minnie's mind. And the cage is like, it's like a force field. Don't you dare put your hand in there unless you want your hand to get bitten off. And that's not our dog's fault. I mean, that's exaggerating, but you see what I'm saying.
I get what you mean. Yeah.
She will
live. That's their territory.
So I think when we pet, in my experience as a layperson, man, whenever I meet a strange pet, first of all, I don't reach my hand first thing. I like try to look at them, try to pick up on their vibe. And if they seem to be kind of acceptable to it, it's that limp hand. And if they sniff it real quick and nothing else, cool. And if you get some pets out of it, cool. Well, the problem is I think there's a lot of people out there that are greedy, man.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what I think. That people, first of all, it is an energy thing. Like you're saying, you're approaching the animal. And in that initial approach, you're already judging. Is this cat want me to pet it? Is this cat afraid of me? Is this cat angry? Is this cat hurt, injured, sick? All these things matter. And then as soon as you get that initial, okay, this cat seems all right with me being near it, then you get a little closer slowly. And then maybe you reach your hand out and let them sniff your hand. But these little steps to it are what smart people do, or people that have animal experience. When you meet the people that are just, you know, no experience or overconfident, or just think every cat is like their cat or other cats that they've met, then they just reach at them or just grab at them, whether they're sleeping in their den or sleeping on a bed or in a bush or on the curb. And I tell everybody, if you don't know the animal and it doesn't come to you, don't try to touch it, because you never know. You think that you've seen it all. You haven't. I probably have. And what I like at work, you know, people, I work with all cats and people get scratched or bit. And I don't. And I tell them, because I treat them all the same, that they're highly, highly capable of hurting you quickly without you having any warning. That the cat is harder to read than a dog. It is harder to read than a dog, and that they're faster. The cats are faster than the dog, and the cats are more flexible and nimble than the dog. Mm-hmm. So it's a different type of respect, but it's equal respect. This is a different type of respect. I treat all dogs the same, all cats the same, horses, pigs, cows, chickens, fish. It doesn't matter the animal. Like you really don't know how they're going to react to what you're doing to them. Because most of the time in my situation, it's not my cat, it's somebody else's cat. And the environment that they're in is strange. So they're never going to act normally. They're never going to behave like you predict they're going to behave. The environment is completely strange to them. Mm-hmm. I'm completely strange to them. What I'm trying to do to them in the veterinary clinic is very strange to them. So all that changes how I'm going to approach them. But to answer the question, how should you approach a pet? I do believe it takes the right kind of energy for a cat too. And then the whole direct answer to the question, like petting them across their back all the way to their tail. Of course they like that. They like scratches. I think cats like under the chin and around the head.
The cheeks.
Yeah, they like all that too, because they have sharp nails. It's hard for them to scratch themselves without hurting themselves.
Yeah.
So we can do it for them. And the same
thing.
They
use that back foot like a dog, but it's they miss spots.
Dogs too. That's why dogs like when you scratch behind their ears and on their faces, because they can't really do it themselves without hurting themselves. Yeah. So, but we can do it for them. And then the belly and the chest area, they can't reach it. Cats and dogs, they can't reach this.
That's
spot
why
right
they
here.
Love that. The sternum. They use, that's why they love
you
that.
You scratch that a lot. And under the chin and cheek, like it's really hard for them to get to these spots. Yeah. So they like that. Then the cats on their back of their tail, on their butts, you stimulate that area on female cats, especially, and they'll like arch their back. That feels really good for them too, you know, and the whole across the tail thing. That's, you know, because they have a lot
I go
of scent
all the way down the back,
and
then I like pull up on the table gently, but like, you know, you pull on the table a little bit, like with a hand around the tail, and then just make sure you finish the motion. Don't hang out on the tail, but like, it makes it really happy.
Yeah. I think people don't know cats have scent glands all along their body, and that's why they rub against
stuff. That.
They rub against everything so they can make it smell like them, and it's on their face.
See, I knew that it was making them. I didn't know it was because of glands. That makes sense.
Yeah, they have
scent
glands. A lot of them on their faces. That's why they're their face, and then along the sides of their body and on their tail and on.
So I stink like my cat, and I don't even realize it. I mean, of course.
Well, yeah, and if you don't, she's gonna come rub herself on you until
to make sure I do. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And that's why they rub themselves on everything. Anything
on your
new,
legs, on your,
bring
you know
something new around your cat. She's going to start rubbing herself on it because she wants things to smell like her. Just like the dogs, when they do this thing on the bed, you know, they paw at it and they're like digging at the bed.
Yeah.
Just because they want it to smell like their feet.
Yeah.
And they put their scent on it. They have a lot of scent glands on their paw pads too.
Interesting. They do it all the like the trees and like a wooden post and stuff like that outside too.
Everything.
They definitely
cats,
like, this is my territory.
That's why you pet cats like that. Yes.
Cool. Cool. I didn't know that. Interesting. All right. So we've got another question from the internet. The internet asks, which pets are low maintenance? So what
great
do you think,
question,
Albert?
Internet. What pets are low maintenance? I love this question. So when I was in tech school, and this is a long time ago, this is in 2003, four, something like that. Okay. We took an exotic pet class, right? I had to take an exotic and lab animal class. Rats is the answer to the question. What's a low maintenance pet? Rats. Oh, they say, man, rats are the smartest, cleanest, easiest first pet for people that never owned pets before, that those are the best first pets for people.
That's fantastic. And I know, yeah, my wife had two rats growing up, so I think she's going to love your answer to that question. I didn't realize that. That's amazing.
Yeah, I think I talked to Kate about it, right?
She loved her rats. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, when you don't know that and you're young, and I consider myself back in 2004 or whatever to be young and not really have any experience with rats, I just thought that they were gross like everybody else.
Like New York rats from like the sewer, like the pizza
a sewer rat.
Yeah, right.
Something dirty.
But that's not the rat's fault. They're just surviving, you know?
It is. And now if I see a rat outside, I don't think of it the same way. Like it's like an outside cat or a squirrel or, you know, it's like, to me, it's the same. It's just an animal. Mm-hmm. But the pet rats are exactly like they were described in the class. When I have had the opportunity, and I don't have a rat, I want a rat. I've always wanted a rat. Not always, but since I learned these things. And, you know, my wife has been hesitant to allow me to have a rat, but I promise you, I will have my rat. And if anybody wants to listen back to some previous episodes of the Pet Peeves podcast, guest Travis Van Ryn, he grew up with rats, and that's one of our most popular episodes.
Okay.
So I know that there's a lot of rat lovers out there. Very surprised, but that's one of our top episodes. I don't know if you knew that. But
I didn't realize that the Travis one with the rats. I didn't know that. Yeah.
It's like top 10. Of, you know, which is pretty incredible because most of the time we just
talk
about
rats.
We got to
have him back on, talk more about rats. Yeah.
So rats, they say because they're very clean, they don't smell bad, they take care of themselves. They'll like in the corner of their den or whatever, wherever you're keeping them, they'll poop in the corner and they don't like make messes, and that they like, you can let them run around their environment and they'll come back like a cat to use the restroom in the same spot. And then the same thing, that they clean themselves like a cat, you know, and that they're just really smart, that you can train them to do things.
They do the cat thing where they like lick their paw and then on their face.
And they groom themselves. Yeah. Very, very, very good. So I think a low maintenance pet. Cats, I think, are low maintenance, but cats, I think, are neglected in a lot of ways.
The cuddles are not necessarily inevitable. You got to earn those. You got to earn
a cat?
With a cat. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But we're talking about,
and then when they're real, low maintenance. But you know what, you and I, before the Pet Peeves podcast ever started, you told me about how you would get a little angry about people who would buy a cat because they heard the cats are low maintenance. And that means that they would just basically abandon them, like neglect them, leave for long weekends. And I actually cat sit for someone, here in Belgium who did that and just left their cat there in an apartment closed, no outdoor option, no nothing. And this kitten was just not okay. Was so neglected that it was like freaking out, wanted to see people, you know? And so when we cat sit, we spend a lot of time there. So we're like, this poor cat is just being neglected.
Oh yeah. I was just going to say that. So yeah, you're preaching to the choir here. It's exactly why I don't like telling people that cats are easy pets, because then they get one and think that they could just leave it alone for days at a time. And people don't realize that, yes, a cat is a low maintenance pet if you maintain it well, that you have multiple litter boxes, that you're changing the litter every single day, that you don't need to change it every day. You need to clean it every day. And actually, you should be cleaning your litter boxes multiple times a day. So the rule of thumb is every time your cat uses a litter box, you should be cleaning it out. So if you walk by your litter box and there's poop or pee in there, clean it out. We get it. You got to go to work. We get it. You might, you know, come home the next day, but clean it out as soon as you can. So if someone's leaving their cats home 2, 3, 4 days in a row, home alone, there's no way they can do that. And so the cats, they might not suffer directly, but inevitably they're going to have bad litter box habits. Mm-hmm. And then that's what causes people to want to get rid of their cat, because the cat's peeing in the corner or peeing in their closet or peeing on the, you know, your tax papers or whatever. And a lot of it is because they're not properly maintaining that cat. So to tell somebody that a cat is a low maintenance pet is not completely, it's just less maintenance than a dog.
No, I don't even necessarily. I mean, like, I know you're the professional, but I've had both. I don't necessarily agree, because having a dog will sleep all day. You know what I mean? And then just like need to go to the bathroom outside, need to be fed at a certain time, but you can get a robot feeder for a dog.
You can get a backyard for a dog. There's a lot of like dog neglect that if you do it right, the dog doesn't live a terrible life, you know? Yeah. And that's a low maintenance pet at that point. Our greyhound growing up, that's a low maintenance pet. A greyhound sleeps all day. Our cat needs attention constantly. A cat naps, like cat naps are real, but our cat needs a lot of attention. So we have all the robots to help. But yeah, we got to clean that litter. And the cat tells you when the cat's angry. The cat tells you when things are unsatisfactory. She is like choosy about customer service around here. You know, she lets you know. As far as low maintenance, as far as the abandonment, I mean, Kate just went out to the supermarket just an hour, like 5 minutes before we started recording. And the cat started screaming at the door. Like cats don't like being left alone. So I'm calling cats high maintenance right now. I'd rather tell someone that and then they don't get a cat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's hard to answer. It's almost like no pets are low maintenance because even my fish, they need maintenance. My bearded dragon needs maintenance. Like they all need maintenance. I was just going
to
ask
you that next. Tell me about the fish thing. I've never had a fish.
The fish is hard because they need to be fed every day. They need to be fed every day. So someone has to come feed them.
Can you get like a robot thing to do?
I don't know. Does that exist? A robot feeder for fish?
I've looked it up before. I think they exist.
I bet it does. I mean, it's probably not far-fetched. I have a robot feeder for the cat.
Do fish need attention? Automatic. Do they like being spoken to? Do they like...
I learned a lot about fish at your wedding in Belgium from one of the guys I met there.
From Ricardo, Ricky.
Ricky, that he was telling me that absolutely they like attention. Absolutely they like interaction and stimulus and that they do benefit from conflict because it's good for their blood pressure and blood flow. That like if fish are alone with no stimulation, that they don't fare as well because they never have any peripheral blood flow, like to their fins. Because it takes their blood pressure to increase because they think they're going to fight or run, you know, the fight or flight reactions.
Yeah.
And that they don't get that if they're not stimulated. So, yes, they do need some interaction. Huh.
It's like animals need stimulation. It's like the question, which pets are low maintenance? The answer is basically, we can tell you the ones that are the most low maintenance, but realistically, you get a pet, that's some responsibility. You're committing to something.
Oh, yeah. And I guess, yes, there are automatic fish feeders. I just looked it up. Of course there are. I don't even know why I bothered looking it up.
Yeah. But yes, your bearded dragon, can you elaborate on that too? Because again, I've never had a bearded dragon.
He's tough. He's really tough because if you leave him in the terrarium, he will just lay there and sleep a lot. But that's not good for them. They need exercise. They're like if you see a bearded dragon in the wild, they're running around, they're climbing trees, they're chasing bugs. They're living a life. They're fighting. They're looking for mates. So for us to keep our bearded dragon in the terrarium just because he'll sleep all day is not what's good for them. So what I've summarized and looked up, you know, I've done some internet research and figured out for myself that the more we take him out of his terrarium and let him interact with us and the dog and the cat, the more friendly he is, the more used to the environment he is. And honestly, in my opinion, the smarter he is because he's learned how to navigate his environment. He's learned how to like to interact with us too. And he knows how to find where he wants to go, which I think is more important than, he could get from one end of the room to the other, but not just that. He'll go from where his cage is to where the sun spot is outside on the patio. So he goes through the dog and cat door, the little doggy door, goes through it just like the dog and cat do, goes outside, finds a sun spot, lays in it. When the sun goes away, he moves to a different spot. When the sun moves, he moves to a different spot. When he gets too cold, he goes back to where his terrarium is so we could put him back inside. And then if he doesn't want to be in his terrarium, he puts up a huge fight. Like if I try to put him in there and he doesn't want to go, he fights. He pushes. He puts his arms out to the side like a dog that doesn't want to take a bath.
Oh my gosh, wow.
And then when he wants to come out, he has even pushed the lid off of his terrarium and climbed out on his own before. So as much as he's pretty stoic and will lay around and do nothing, he also likes attention. He's very, looks around. He's very curious. He's always trying to figure out what we're doing. If we're sitting over here.
Well, speaking of the cuddly question we just had, he's climbed up on you a lot and he likes pets.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's how I knew he was bonding with us because I had never had a bearded dragon before. But one day he was on the other side of the room and he ran up to my foot and climbed up on my shoe. And I was like, is that a coincidence? Did that just happen on accident? Was I just in his way, you know? So then I moved him to the other side of the room and went on the other side of the room and he did it again. I sat on the floor and he ran up my lap and onto my chest.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, he loves me.
That's pretty clear behavior. Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty awesome. And then he likes to be right here. Like if you put him on your chest, cool. He'll come under your neck like a cat does.
That's cool.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Cause that's
yeah,
where
yeah, warm, exactly.
And he'll try to nuzzle in there. That's like great. I know the next questions are asking about cats or pets that cuddle.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
But what's this one? Low maintenance pets? I don't know. It's really hard. I don't think there are any low maintenance pets. There's just some pets that are less maintenance because you've trained them well, because you have a good system, because you have some consistency, because you've done something to control their environment and their eating and their exercise and their socialization that you're allowed to step away for a day or two. But hopefully you have a pet sitter like as well trained as my pets are. And I know I can leave them alone. I would never leave my pets alone for too long. Because they need interaction, they need stimulation, and I need to know that there's no emergencies happening. They're like children. This is something we've talked about in other episodes.
Right.
My dog is only 7. You would never leave a 7-year-old home alone for days. You know what I mean? And you're saying like, yeah, the dog in human years is 49. Like, no, she isn't. She's still a 7-year-old.
She's a 7-year-old dog. Entity. Yeah.
Being, yeah. You can't leave her alone for very long. And just like the cat is 3. You can't leave them alone very long. And that's the other part of it. Like, regardless of how well they're trained or what automatic feeders you have or water fountains and automatic cleaning litter boxes and all that, you're not going to know if something went wrong if you're not there.
Look, and one of the things that concerns me, and this is going to come off as a little judgy, but, you know, I'm a little judgy. And this is one of the most Googled questions about pets this spring. And it makes me think there's a bunch of people that want to go pet shopping and they Google this question.
What pet can I get and go on vacation?
What pet can I get and basically not have any responsibility? And that's me being judging. I'm scapegoating millions of people who've Googled this.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, I mean, people could be Googling it with different motivations, but it just makes me, if we can use this podcast to really remind people, if that's your motivation, don't get a pet. That's your motivation, volunteer at a shelter and get your pet fixed.
Don't even get a plant.
Yeah. Talk to your friends who have pets and pet sit for them. Learn a little bit about it, you know, and learn that it's going to take maintenance. It's going to, you answered a question last Q&A episode about, it was an answer to the question of like, which pet can pets teach responsibility? And it's like, no, but you can learn responsibility and be a good pet owner as a result. But don't use the pet to teach you responsibility. Don't get a pet because it's the least maintenance of all the pets.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. But I think the people that do look at it that way are not long for the pet world, like you were saying. So they should go to a shelter and see what all the other people who wanted a low maintenance pet ended up doing with those poor animals. Maybe foster a pet, then see what it's like. And then maybe go find yourself something that makes sense for you.
That's a good point. Okay. Which pets like to cuddle? Pretty light questions today, man. Pretty light questions.
Yeah, man. Dogs, cats, in my world, the bearded dragon. I think I've seen people cuddling with all animals, bears, horses. What did I see online? People cuddling with like lions and tigers. And I guess it's whatever you're willing to put your face
next to. Even a porcupine would want to, but you might want to wear some like armor or something.
Maybe some goggles.
Yeah.
Some protective gear.
Like one of those baseball catcher's outfits.
What do you think? What's the strangest animal you've seen somebody cuddling with?
I mean, your bearded dragon. I think that for me, it blows my mind. You know, I think it's so cool. I guess it's not that strange, but you're used to it. For me, that's like, it's just a funky pet. It's just a little bit different. But for me, I'm just very much in the dogs and cats world. I guess farm animals, like people make friends with their horses and pigs and stuff like that. But yeah, your bearded dragon, that's like a little exotic in my world. It's pretty cool to be exposed to that. You really normalize that, you know?
Absolutely. For me too. I never would have known because somehow it just missed me. That little bit of information that this bearded dragon can be such a companion. But once you do the research and you start reading about other people's experiences with bearded dragons, is that they're like that, they have really great personalities. So that's a really great pet for people as well. So I'm not sure about everybody's ability to take care of one of these pets. They do take a really particular type of diet and a lot of really specific housing situation, you know, the equipment I have to buy, the lights and everything, and his temperature and his humidity and what he, you know, the bugs he eats and all that. It's a lot of upkeep. But if you keep him happy, he's just like the dog or the cat. He's got personality. He's got things he likes and doesn't like. He sleeps a lot, you know, and he's super cute. And it's just like we talked about before. He's just like his only job is to eat, sleep, and be cute. And so he's got like the best life. And he's new for most people. Most people that come over here have never had that kind of experience with an exotic pet before either. So for them to hold him and put him on their shirt and, you know, the fact that they all see him on the internet interacting with the dog and the cat, and then he's so normal. That's really opens up other people's experiences too. So many people have come over to my apartment and held him and told me how they were afraid at first and then not because he's so calm. And that's the experience that I've had too. Just, I had to learn. I had to learn that there's other animals out there that have personality. It's not just dogs and cats, and they like to cuddle and they want to, like, literally if he's cuddling here and I try to pull him off, he grips and he doesn't want to go.
Under your chin. He wants his head nuzzled under your chin.
He wants to stay there. Yeah. He wants to stay where we are. He wants to stay where it's warm. He likes to just not be in his little house. I'm sure too. I'm sure he gets bored in there.
Yeah. Well, you
especially
know,
he knows he has options. Go ahead.
You know, I think it's one of the things, I think we learned a little bit about when we were talking on the previous question about low maintenance. One of the points I wanted to make earlier was that I think in 2020, many of us discovered what it's like to be in a cage. Like when you're put in your home and you're not allowed to leave, and a lot of people are getting a little bit fatter, a little bit less smart because you're just not engaging your brain. Yeah, just like we just become kind of like the humans in WALL-E, right? We become a little bit like dogs, right? You remember that? And so it makes me think, I think this is, do animals like to cuddle, even a bearded dragon, something exotic like that? I think animals just, they like interaction. They like interaction with other animals. They like interaction with you. They like interaction with the outdoors. They like exercise. It just, all of this stuff makes them cuddle more, but all these adventures that they go on, all this stimulation leads to just a happier household for you and them.
Absolutely. A happier animal, happier person. I do think the dragon would benefit from seeing what it's like to be around other dragons. So I'd kind of feel bad for him.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think the dog and the cat, the dog definitely gets to meet other dogs often. The cat has met other cats, know what it's like to be around other cats. My bearded dragon, I think he's met another bearded dragon once. So I think that's sad for him because I think he thinks he's a dog or a cat.
See, that was exactly what I was going to ask, because you think that because there's the classic, if a cat grows up around a bunch of dogs, the cat thinks it's a dog, right? And vice versa. So you think that's happening, you know?
Yes. I only think that because the bearded dragons display certain behaviors when they're around each other, right? And my bearded dragon doesn't display those behaviors. I've seen him do it one time when he was around the other dragon where they wave. Have you ever heard of this? The bearded dragon wave?
No, I haven't heard of this.
It's super cute. It's just like you're picturing in your head. It's this very cute. They pick up their hand and they wave at each other. And it's a submissive motion. So the submissive, smaller or younger bearded dragon will do the waving. Mm-hmm. And the bigger one fluffs up its beard. That's why they're called bearded dragons. They have this like skin under their chin that they fluff up. And my dragon will fluff his chin up. Sometimes it's just like he's stretching or yawning. He'll fluff his beard.
Okay.
But he only waved one time when that other dragon was around. So I feel kind of bad for him for that. But he does run around with the dog and the cat. Like he'll chase after the cat. He'll jump on the dog because that's what he sees.
Right, right.
We've tried showing him like video on the tablet of other bearded dragons, but he doesn't react.
Yeah, I think which pets like to cuddle. You asked me earlier, what's the kind of the wildest cuddling pet situation I've ever seen. It's your dog and cat cuddling with each other and other dogs and cats cuddling with each other. You know, seeing videos on the internet of dogs and cats cuddling with each other, because we keep trying to socialize Salty, and Salty loves people. And Salty's fascinated by dogs, but she needs to always be in a position where she feels safe. Yeah. You know, and she's she's a lot of an instigator. And so I think she likes getting dogs in trouble and watching it brew, you know, and so the dog next door, the neighbor dog next door really wants to play with Salty, and Salty like hisses at her and does just enough to get the dog in trouble. Cause the dog's a small yappy dog and gets in trouble, you know, but it's not the dog's fault. It's Salty's fault, but Salty's, you know, doesn't bark. So I think Salty's just, I mean, we named her Salty for goodness sakes. Like we get who she is. But she is becoming friends with the neighbor cat. They don't quite cuddle, but they sniff each other. They're around each other. They go on adventures together. Like they actually, Kate caught them in the office when I was out at work.
Oh, that's right.
At the home office, she caught them, and like it was like two teenagers weren't where they were supposed to be, and they kind of scampered out. And it's like, cool, all right, nice. They're
making friends, getting into trouble.
Yeah, exactly, getting into trouble together. It's great, teenagers, you know. But but your dog and your cat playing together and cuddling together—that melts my heart. That's good.
I don't know if anybody saw my today's Instagram post. Okay. I woke up with my dog and cat sleeping on my legs. Like I woke up with them both on my legs, and I can't move. You know, I'm like trapped in the blankets because they're both on top of me. And like, yeah, they sleep together. We wake up in there, like, because they have a dog bed and a cat bed.
Okay.
And a lot of times we find them either sleeping in the same bed together or they've swapped somehow in the middle of the night. So they just love each other. And I don't know how that happened and how you get animals to want to cuddle with each other. I think just raising them together and getting lucky too, and being, you know, around them a lot. I think that's a big part of it. We're just around them a lot and we interact with them a lot. I think a lot of people have pets and kind of just leave them over there to do their own thing. That's not how we are. When we're at home, our pets are right with us the whole time. And if they're not, we go like grab them.
Yeah.
Bring them over.
Yeah.
Because that's why we got them. Because we want them.
You were invited to socialize. Now, if you scamper away, that's your choice, but you're invited. Sure. Like,
yes.
Yeah. And it works for us. It works a percentage of the time, like not every time, but when we bring her towards the other thing, like Salty's kind of young and she's fidgety, but the thing I've noticed is she really likes to cuddle for about 2 minutes. You know, she likes to cuddle for about 2 minutes and then she's like, I'm going to run away and do something else, you know, but it's kind of a short attention span, but it's very rewarding. And our old boy, before he passed, he would cuddle on you for 3-4 hours. He wouldn't move, you know? So it's just a different thing to get used to, but I think it's an age thing. I mean, is it? Sure. You tell me.
I don't know.
It just depends.
I would say probably with age, they're going to be more, you know, lethargic, just like less likely to want to go play. They're going to be less playful. I would say not lethargic, less playful.
He's got that kitten energy, man. It's like the whole
world.
Kitty
is also indoor outdoor kitty. So I think she just has a lot of like options of things to do and places to go and things to play with. And
she hates being bored, I think.
She can just go outside and play.
Yeah.
So my cat, she needs more stimulation. She plays with the dog a lot because there's nothing else to do. She plays with us a lot because there's nothing else to do. She doesn't go outside.
Which pets like to cuddle? The one thing I do like it is when you've got your pet is really stimulated and they come in and tell you what they want. You know, like are you interested at all in getting some of those like communication buttons? Have you seen some of those? What do you think about those?
I think they work. Stupid? I think it's cool.
You think I think they're kind of neat. You know,
I think it's cool. I mean, I'm just like, I don't know. I've never played with it. So if that were something I ever played with and had the option of having it at my home, I would probably take advantage. Why not?
Yeah.
Well, you're talking about like where the animals push the button.
Yeah. They say like treats,
food,
pets,
walk me. Yeah.
That kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's cool. And I know that I've seen it work and I know that you could teach your dog to do it and your cat too. I've seen people teach cats to use those same kinds of devices.
Well, we don't have that yet, but she just walks in and she has a certain meow where she just yells at you and she's like, hey, play with me. You know, it's just that meow, you know, it's not the cuddle me. It's not the, I need food. It's the specific meow, you know?
When my cat wants a cuddle, when I'm asleep, she'll come and she'll try to get under the blanket I'm sleeping in and she'll paw until I wake up and like lift it a little bit. And then she'll go under, she'll go between my legs and sleep there. Right. And then if she's comfortable and happy enough, she'll start to knead in my leg. So I have to like put a layer of sheet between my leg and her. So she'll paw at that. And my wife has scars on her back of her arm from the cat doing that. Cause the cat sleeps with us on us
of course.
And then kneads at night and scratches us.
Oh my goodness.
But she's so cute. It's like you said, it's like a reward. We're being rewarded with her presence that she loves us enough to come try to sleep with us and cuddle with us at night.
Exactly.
The dog will sleep with us for a little while and then go down to the floor and sleep in her bed and then come back to cuddle with us in the morning because she wants us to take her for a walk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that morning. Like they woke up at 4, they went back to sleep, and now they're cuddling with you and they're trying to get you to wake up.
Right.
Pets are the best alarm clocks when it works, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, it's nice. She's kind of like, I think she took it personal that we were gone for 3 weeks because of Christmas, and we had her looked after. She was well looked after, but when we came back for Christmas, when you live on a different continent as your family, I think when you go for Christmas, like it's a long time. And I think she did not like that. The first couple nights we were back, she cuddled with us. But then after that, you could sense some resentment. And I thought, you know, fair enough from her prerogative, you know, and it's like, we need to earn that back. And it just started clicking. Like, I think 3 weeks ago, it's just, she's just all in, you know, cause, and it's starting to become the thing where we've had her for about a year. No, we've had her for about 8 months and she's a little over a year old. It's now becoming the situation where does she remember a life before us? And I think she's starting to get that loyalty. Which pets like to cuddle? Some pets are an easy cuddle. I think some of them, it's a loyalty thing. I think some of them, you know, you got to pay your dues.
Absolutely. You know?
So what's the next question? Here we go. Which pets are the most affectionate?
Which pets are the most affectionate? I don't know. That's a hard question to answer. I don't know. Dogs and cats, it seems like to me, they're like always with people. They're constant companions. They're always there. The man's best friend, the dog. What are their, I mean, people like, does my bearded dragon show affection by wanting to be near me? I guess so. What is considered affection?
I suppose the person who is Googling this might want like a dog answer, like a Labrador who will come and just lick your face off.
Like which breeds? Kind of
yeah.
I guess so. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. That's probably more of what the question is asking, which kind of breeds and stuff like that. Well, my opinion, this is my opinion. Females, dog or cat, are a little bit more affectionate. Like if you have a female dog or a female cat, they're gonna be a little more needy attention wise, and the males will be a little more independent in general. Not always, but I think sometimes. And then I think with a lot of the dogs that are more needy are the working breeds, the dogs that are gonna want your attention a lot, or dogs that are used to having a job and they're bred to do something. So they're just like waiting to be told what to do, waiting to be told what to do, waiting to be told what to do. So they're gonna be there a lot. And then they're also, those are like the terrier breeds and the working breeds. They're very smart. They're super smart. So they're gonna want your attention and they're gonna learn how to get it. They're gonna learn how to get your attention in one way or another. And then they're going to repeat that behavior over and over and over again until you can train them out of it. So that's like a good thing and a bad thing. They're going to learn bad habits just as quickly as they learn good habits. So you got to be really good with those kind of dogs.
What about mutts versus pure breeds? So do you notice affection any difference wise, affection behavior wise?
No, not really. No, but I do think that pets that come from like a shelter situation or some traumatic background are a little more needy. A little more like glued to their owners or their adopters. They're a little more like hide under the legs and submissive and just not trusting of new people. So the affectionate ones, I think they're going to be more affectionate to you if you don't socialize them with other people too. They're going to be like under your legs. They're going to be wanting to be in your lap.
Right.
If you have a dog that's in your lap all the time and you don't ever put this pet down, dog or cat, any breed, they're going to have a hard time when other people try to come around you. I think that's the other part.
Which pets are the most affectionate to whom? You know, I think that's there are additions to this question for clarification. Yeah.
And then you have your like happy-go-lucky golden retriever that's just affectionate to everybody, that just wants to be everybody's buddy, everybody's best friends, running around sniffing everybody with no prejudice, nothing, no filters. They're just everybody's friend. So I think that's like a younger animal thing, and then animal that just hasn't had any negative interactions with humans, that's only had positive interactions with people. They're going to want to meet everybody. And then those breeds too, those golden retrievers, those golden labs, those, what am I thinking?
Chocolate labs too. I mean,
chocolate, any of those just most popular breeds in the world.
Wagging so hard. Yeah.
Yeah, they're just so used to people, and then that's just inbred into them to just be affectionate, and that they're usually normally the dogs that people aren't afraid of. And I think that energy is a big part of making dogs friendly, like how to approach a dog. Well, have good energy, have good confidence. And that goes a long way too. So when someone sees a golden retriever, when someone sees a yellow lab, they're less afraid than if they see a pit bull.
And shout outs to beagles too. I mean, I've had a lot of really good interactions with beagles. They can show really good affection, you know?
Yeah. Beagles are affectionate. My dog is affectionate. She's a dachshund mix, dachshund terrier mix. Yeah. And those are dachshunds, is a terrier breed, working dog breed.
Yeah.
So yeah, super affectionate. My cat is super affectionate. Every dog I've ever had is affectionate. And they're all affectionate. They're all different breeds. I think they're all terriers though. And somehow that's just happened. The dogs are from the shelter, cat. I don't know. It's pretty random. What do you think?
I think that one of my biggest shout outs for affectionate but original is the Greyhound, who I have a lot of experience with. So our Greyhound growing up, very affectionate. Again, my brother's current dog, pretty traumatized. She's affectionate if you're in her circle of trust, you know? And then our neighbors here in Brussels have a Greyhound. He is maybe the most affectionate dog I've ever met in my life. He is ridiculously affectionate, you know, like he wants to almost be a lap dog. He wants to jump up on you and stuff like that. He's so affectionate.
And I've seen that too. It's like really hard. It's really hard to say because some dogs want to be in your lap the whole time. And if you just tell them no, they're okay. You know?
And what I'm trying to say is you can't even answer the question with a breed or a gender. Like there's no consistency.
Pretty random.
But Greyhounds do a really interesting thing when they're affectionate. They don't lick. They just put a cold nose on you. Do you know any other dog breeds who do that?
That don't lick?
That don't lick. Is it like the Greyhound, Whippet, Italian Greyhounds? Are they consistent with that? I don't know much.
I didn't even know that they don't lick. Is that a thing? Greyhounds don't lick?
They even hesitate to eat food out of your hand. Now, if they want it, they'll go get the food. But often they take their long snout. And because they've got like an anteater tongue. That thing is long, right? Oh, yeah. And they just don't bust it out a ton. Now, will a Greyhound lick you eventually? Yeah, eventually. But you got to really know them. And they don't do it. You know, the whole time we had our Greyhound growing up, he didn't lick me. We'd have to get peanut butter and put it on a spoon for him to lick it, you know?
That's interesting. I've never had a Greyhound, so it's hard to say. And the experience I've had with Greyhounds is a while ago. And I just met your friend's Greyhound when I was there.
Yeah.
And I can't remember any licks, but there's just some dogs that don't lick a lot. And then there's some dogs that lick a lot. Like my dog licks constantly. Like it's her go-to move. She wants to lick everybody and lick, and she will keep licking you if you let her. So that's the other thing. I don't know. I think it's just depends on their breed, their environment, whatever. If say you have a pet that you allow to be in your lap all the time and allow to sleep in your bed and allow to be with you a lot. And then that same pet goes somewhere else where somebody doesn't have that same need for the pet to be with them at all times and has different rules for where the pet can be. I bet that they'll adjust their behavior and need less attention and be less affectionate. I bet a lot of it is learned.
You were mentioning earlier about rats. Like rats are pretty affectionate and pretty, you know, cuddly and things of that nature. Yeah.
I don't know. I've never had one, but not that I've not heard that they're a super affectionate. I just heard that they're very smart and clean, which makes them a low maintenance pet, an easy pet. A low maintenance
pet,
Not necessarily super cuddly, but smart and clean. And surely when I think of something being smart, that it learns that you are its caretaker and that they learn that you are the source of its happiness.
Yeah.
So you have some kind of bond and relationship.
But I'd say cats are hit or miss when it comes to affection. But once they figure out, hey, this place is safe, then it's like, it's their choice, but they choose to be affectionate very often. And what about like horses and cows and pigs? And there's a lot there there's a gap in my knowledge there. How affectionate do these get?
I've seen them all be affectionate. Okay. I've seen horses go up to people and nuzzle them. Of course, we've all seen horses nuzzle
the
people.
The horse nuzzle, that's classic.
Yeah. And the same thing with cows. Like my wife and her family will do a lot of work with cows. So I've been recently around where the cows know them, know the certain people, know my wife, and will come up to them and lick them, and a lot of licking with these cows too that you wouldn't have predicted. Their big sloppy tongues and just their nuzzling too, and their big soft noses.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've seen that too. These animals learn. They learn to associate you with whatever pleasure, positive reinforcement you're providing them, stimulus, food, affection.
Huh.
And as long as you're nice to them, they like you.
Huh. Huh. Well, hopefully, you know, these videos are doing so well. I'm
hoping we can get some people like making some comments and things like that. What hey, I've got think? This pet and they're actually really affectionate. And you guys didn't mention that. Like, I don't know, maybe someone has a snake and they're affectionate or something.
An affectionate owl. I want to know.
Right? Birds? I didn't even think about birds. Like,
my dad has a bird and I don't know if he's affectionate. He definitely wants attention. You know, he definitely likes attention. Is that the same thing as being affectionate?
I don't know. It's like, it's engagement. You know, but it's
but I have seen people, you know, that their bird is with them and they're cuddling with their parakeet. And I'm guessing it's like, just how is your bond with this animal? You can cuddle if your bond is close.
Sunday, I was on a jog. Kate was on a bike ride and we were on Sunday at the park and someone had their bird with them, like some kind of, just on their shoulder. They're just waiting in line, getting a beer. And it was just a bird on their shoulder. Yeah.
That's insane. See?
Yeah. That seems like affection. I don't know.
Mike Tyson loves his tigers.
I mean, right? Yeah, it's all different. I mean, fish, like Ricardo, we got to get Ricardo on here and talk about betta fish.
Oh, yeah, that's true, man.
He has a wealth of knowledge. So much knowledge, you know? And I mean, there's got to be something there. Very interesting. Very interesting. Talking about animal behavior, very interesting. Which pets are good for home? Might not be the best English practiced in this question.
I got it.
This is exactly what is asked on Google. And which pets are good for home? Like, which are good homebody pets, you know?
Tough question. It depends. I think animals benefit from having a lot of space. Most of them having a lot of space. Even a small pet. You think about like a fish in a fish tank. Like, that's pretty small from what their natural environment is. A terrarium for my bearded dragon, pretty small. An apartment for my dog and my cat, pretty small. So I'd say if you're saying home, as much space as you could give a pet, they all need space. But if you just want to keep a pet inside, let's just try to answer the question. Something small, something small. You don't want an elephant in a small space. You know, you don't want a dog or a cat in a small space. I think they get bored and that causes behavior issues.
I think the one thing I will say here, again, the exception to all the rules is the greyhound. I mean, greyhounds don't make bad apartment dogs because they're such couch potatoes. They just require a daily walk. You got to get them a raincoat. You got to get them a snow jacket. They walk every day. And if they live in a snowy environment, you know, that wasn't what they were originally bred for. So you got to bundle them up really well. They got to get some kind of exercise. And if you can find some sort of fenced in area, a dog park, something to get them to run a little bit, or an extended leash in an open field, that is also really good for them to exercise those muscles that they've been bred to grow. They are race cars. But
that's my main point.
Having a big house doesn't make that much difference for a greyhound because they spend all day on the sofa or on their dog bed. Or like 23 hours a day and 1 hour a day sprinting, you know, like this is what the breed is meant to do, is to rest and sprint. So they're kind of a weird exception. Do you know of any other big dog breeds that like kind of rest 22, 23 hours a day?
Yeah. It's like you can like these giant, say like a Great Dane. Great Danes, right. You can have in your house. People do all the time. People love Great Danes, but they still need exercise. Mm-hmm. So if you do have a home and you have a greyhound or one of these Great Danes or an English Mastiff or one of these 200-pound dogs, you have to at least have a yard or the ability to walk them.
Yeah.
Right? You can't just keep them in your house all day and like have them poop on the puppy pad.
Oh no, and I would never mean something like that. They got to have that daily walk. That's critical. Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. I'm trying to answer the question directly. Like just to have in your home and it never leaves your home, something small, cuz I know people have had cats in their studio apartment. And the cat never goes for a walk and it's an indoor only cat. And that cat is okay because it doesn't know any better. That's its whole life. But could you have a dog in that same environment that never leaves the studio and poops inside and sleeps inside and never leaves? I'm sure you could, but that seems like an awful existence to me for a dog or a cat. So I think like, if you're going to have an indoor pet, a pet that mainly stays inside, and let's accept that your dog is going out for walks once or twice a day. So any animal that you can get proper exercise, I would say what's good for a home, if you can get proper exercise and a reasonable environment that they could be comfortable, happy, healthy, clean. I mean, anything can be good for a home.
Yeah, I think there was a really interesting book that I read gosh, when was this? Like a couple of years ago. And it was all about kind of our, it was a very like futuristic book, kind of all about digital future and this and that. And there was some chapters on kind of robot related pets. Have you seen some of this stuff?
Of course.
The robot dog and stuff like
that. Yes.
And, robot dogs. I've seen there's robot dogs. And then for the elderly, there's like a seal pup. That's a robot, but it's like a soft kind of pillow. And it's this idea of, I mean, and there's the phenomena from when we were kids, that whole Tamagotchi thing, like you get the little, you have to feed it and this and that. And I know it's kind of crazy to bring up the Pet Peeves podcast. Typically, we talk about biological pets, I think for a good reason, you know?
For sure.
It's what you studied, but I think there's this idea of if you want that companionship, if you want that affection, if you want that, there are ways to simulate that and you're not going to hurt a living being, you know? Yeah,
that's really good that you mentioned that. And we learned about these robot pets in school too.
It's interesting. Not, okay, cool.
And that was a long time ago. So they had these robo dogs. Mm-hmm. The robo dog, they were taken around to old folks' homes to just see if there was a positive effect on their well-being. Like the other question was asked, are pets good for mental health? So the robot pets like the Tamagotchi and anything that needs to be taken care of, but because the robot dog would respond, come, sit, stay, bark, and you know, follow you around.
Right,
the old
right.
people would like to pet it. And then they came out with the new version, the seal one you're talking about, that's softer, not a robot, but that they can pet it. Mm-hmm. Then it makes the people
but
feel
it's
better.
Got, but it has, it is kind of a robot though. It doesn't move a lot, but it gives facial recognition and responses and stuff like that. It's fascinating.
Absolutely. And the fact that it actually had positive effects on these people's stress level and blood pressure and mental health, that I was pretty surprised, because I think that I wouldn't, but I probably would too. If I was playing with this thing and it was interacting with me and it was responding to me, I'd probably laugh and smile and have a good time, and maybe it would get boring eventually because it's a toy, but I think it would be cool at first. And if they improve the technology, even better. And then if that's your pet at home, and if that's the future of pet ownership, the robo dog.
I don't know that it is so much, but it was, but
for
just,
some people,
it was
maybe.
Interesting though, that like a kid in his dorm room took this, I think it was a Toyota based pet. I forget what the brand was, Sony. I don't know, whatever. And it was one of these kind of advanced robot dogs. And he took it to his dorm room, and because you can't have pets in your dorm room, but he wanted that companionship, and he had it his senior year of high school. So he took it to the dorm room, and that was the one of the stories that they told in this book. And I thought it was amazing, you know, like this is a robot, but it's giving the human part of that equation is experiencing something similar. Yes.
Right.
Right. Now there's no exchange. There's nothing ticking up there, but we're going through the motions of pet ownership. I'll tell you what, maybe the answer to the question, how do you teach pet responsibility? It's that. Start with the robo dog. If you can't do the robo dog, you don't deserve to have
it's
a pilot.
Like the Tamagotchi. It's like that parenting class you take in high school and they make you carry around a baby.
Yeah.
That has like a robot in it that if it cries, you got to feed it. And that's it. People get some kind of, it's like a video game where you level up.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to like solve problems. And maybe if that's what you like, and that's the part of the pet ownership that you enjoy, just taking care of something, that you get something back from it. At least
that kind of psychological experience, responsibility training, then the payoff. And the robot is programmed to give you
supports
payoff.
It. You know? The science supports it. It absolutely makes people feel better to have something to interact with and take care of.
So
even if it's not actually alive.
So something small, or, you know, maybe consider alternatives to biology. Like don't put
just make friends with your Roomba. It's got a mind of its own.
Sometimes, man. Just wants to eat everything like a pet. It wants to, hey, stop chewing on that. Hey, stop it.
There you go. Let that go.
We tell our Roomba.
Put that down.
Should pets be allowed in school? I think probably a younger part of the audience is Googling this, you know?
Should pets be allowed in school? Like emotional support animals or service animals? Or they just mean like, can you bring your pets to school day?
I literally copied this from Google Questions. So we're going to have to interpret
we'll try
it.
To
I brought my
pet
once. I did a show and tell and brought my dog to school. That was pretty fun.
Your greyhound?
But it probably wasn't good for the dog. He was shaking like a leaf, you know? It was like too much stimuli, you know? Too many kids.
I have done presentations at schools where we bring an animal and talk about it, talk about dog safety, cat care, being responsible. It's like stuff that, you know, comes up obviously. Mm-hmm. But I think actually like people just randomly bringing their pets to school. Absolutely not. Definitely not.
Terrible. Yeah.
Because people are irresponsible, and especially school in my mind, it relates to young people. Young people don't make great decisions a lot of times when it comes to responsibility and just taking owner or taking responsibility for if something goes wrong. These are children that they're not even able to take full responsibility if something goes wrong.
We had mice in a cage when we were in fourth grade.
Class pet. That makes sense to me.
Class pet, class fish.
But that's the teacher's responsibility, right?
Yep.
So should you just
And then they like choose a student and it's their job for the week. And then they alternate, you know, stuff like that, you know?
Yeah. I think that that's proper. I don't think that people should be taking their pets to school.
Oh no, of course not. What do you think about like office dogs or office cats though?
No, I don't like that either.
You don't like that either. Interesting.
No, I think that it promotes that sort of thing getting out of hand. Once you have one, why not two? And then once you have two, why not three? And then who gets to decide?
Yeah.
There's more than one person that works there. What if some people don't want a cat walking around or a dog around? What if you don't want that? Now you don't have a choice.
What if you're working at like a newspaper and you have the cat that exists at the newspaper and you've got this terrible cat allergy and you're just trying to do your job? You know what I mean?
I'm saying it becomes a conflict of interest. I just think that it's not the right environment. So and I'm an animal advocate. I love animals. And in the places that I've worked where there's a cat walking around or a dog walking around, it's fine. I don't care. But I do most of the time see it becoming an issue. Because say like I work in an environment where we're bringing in animals.
Yeah.
So now there's just this cat walking around and this dog walking around. You don't know how those interactions are going to go with these other animals.
Yeah.
Let alone if there are no other animals around, it's just people. Huh. You don't know how people are going to interact with that dog or that cat or vice versa, how they're going to interact with those people. So that's what I mean about bringing animals into public environments without it being like super controlled. You're just asking for trouble. And I think places like school, it's too many variables to bring animals around unless they're like you're saying the classroom pet stays in the classroom, stays in a terrarium, stays in an enclosure. Mm-hmm. If you have a service animal, it stays with one person and that one person, that pet is supposed to be trained and supposed to have, you know, proper license and certification like we talked in the other episode. So that's I don't know. I just think it's a slippery slope.
That's interesting. It's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. Will pets eat their owners?
Yeah, this is a weird question.
It took a dark turn. Yeah. Mm.
Will pets eat their owners? I mean, I've heard that it happens from reputable sources, so I'm sure it can, but I don't think it's that common. But like in what situation? The situation that I've heard it is like where the owner dies and the pets aren't getting fed. So they find something to eat and it happens to be.
And they probably don't eat the whole thing. It's probably just
they just like chew and nibble. Yeah, they nibble on the fingers, they nibble on the nose, they nibble on the like whatever. And I know it's a cat is what I've heard, but dogs too, I've heard too. I've heard dogs, I've heard cats. Cause what I've heard is once that happens, that they, you know, that they don't try to rehome those pets, that those pets that they don't, that they're not going to just send to live with another person after that. So those animals end up in the shelter a lot.
Wow. Okay.
And I'm sure that happens more often than people think about, like an elderly person that has pets passes away and no one knows about it for a couple of days. What happens?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it also makes me think of like the movie Jaws and what that spurred about, like sharks and this idea of like sharks eating people, the man eating shark, and how that's largely a myth. Statistically, it's largely a myth, and it's led to killing off a lot of that species, of those species, which is really detrimental to, you know, like ocean hierarchies and things of that nature.
This is like that. I think that stereotype that a cat will eat you when you die is
Gotta be overblown. Yeah. Yeah. Or pigs. I've heard about like if you have a pet pig, that's a problem.
But I have heard you could feed bodies, so that's something. But
I've heard that from gangster owners.
That's a lot of movies. Have I actually known anybody who's done it? No. But Pablo Escobar, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen that in a lot of gangster movies. It's pretty popular. I think pigs eat like quickly. They're pigs. They eat pigs. I mean, that's, you know, the stereotype is around for a reason. They're not picky eaters.
Right.
So it's not so much that like they crave human flesh. Human, it's just right. like, it's like, we'll put gravy on it and they don't, they're not picky, you know?
Yeah. So. Pets eating owners. I don't think that that's.
Yeah.
People, maybe it happens, but even like, if I tried to look it up, I couldn't find any stories, only like BuzzFeed clickbait.
I found like, some clickbait junk and that was about it. I didn't, you know, yeah, I bet if we dug deeper, we could find some real story. Florida man, you know, but
yeah, I'm sure there's an exception out there, but.
Also, if you're going to have a pet tiger, I mean, I guess, no, I have heard a nasty story about that people had a boa constrictor and then they had a baby.
Yes.
And the boa ate the baby.
Yes, this is true.
I heard about that story.
I've heard stories about that. Yes, snakes swallowing their owners.
Like a python or something. Yeah. I'm not telling the story perfectly.
Yeah, so these are pets. There was a story of a family that lived in the same building with a pet store, and a giant boa got out of the pet store, climbed through the vents, and swallowed two kids.
Oh my God.
And this is a true story. People could look that up. Yeah. So can pets eat their owners? Yes.
I mean, if your pet's a boa constrictor, but you know, I'm going to be a little judgy. I just don't fully understand the having a baby and then having an exotic huge python as a cuddly pet. I know people bond with snakes.
Yes.
I know people bond with snakes, and I'm not trying to say they don't. And I mean, also people have like pit bulls and Rottweilers, and I met pit bulls who were just softies. They're just cute, cuddly, but they were bred to be, you know, pretty strong fighters. So
fighting is not eating though. Like what's actually swallowing humans, snakes, and anything else? I don't know. I know people like the bear grizzly guy. He was in there too close with the bears. He got eaten by bears. So like, it depends what you consider a pet. These wild animals, you consider it a pet, it might take you out. People that have like the pet lions and pet tigers, you know, there's people getting eaten.
Depends on what you consider
pet lions and pet tigers, right? Especially if you get something from outside, like a wild animal, and you take it in and try to turn it into a domesticated pet.
But there's not an epidemic of like Pomeranians eating humans.
No. See, now I'm looking at the question differently. What are you calling a pet? That wolf that you raised from a puppy that you think isn't going to snap? Or what about the people who stick in their heads in the alligator's mouth and the alligator bites down?
Yeah. I mean, Pet Peeves Podcast, overanalyzing clickbait since 2016.
The nuances.
I tell you. You got to get into the nuance. You got to get into the nitty gritty. Next question. Can pets reduce stress? This kind of picks up on the thing we talked about last week, but I think it's more specific. You know what I mean? It's not just mental health. It's just stress reduction.
Absolutely. I think the answer is yes. Can pets reduce stress? Absolutely, they can. How do they reduce stress? I think like it's physiological. Like you have a physiological response to a pet like you do to a baby. The way that it looks, its facial structure, big eyes, cute face and soft, and you can pet it. All those things are like for reducing stress. It's soft when you pet it. The smell of a pet, even that smell makes you like relax, like the smell of a baby and that little face and their little big eyes and all that. Like you have an innate response to all that to lower your blood pressure and stress and all that. What do you think?
I think you were talking earlier about how like even non-biological pets, the robot pets have been proven to reduce blood pressure and noticeably reduce stress and all these quantifiers in the elderly and in closed experiments or where they really took stats on it. And if a robot can reduce stress, then I mean, a real biological pet's got to be, you know, just better as effective, if not more, you know? So, and even those moments when a pet can increase stress, when the pet does this thing that you're not supposed to do, like, okay, fair enough. But that's just part of the maintenance, part of the responsibility aspect. But when you feel a pet's love, I mean, it's got to be stress reduction. It's got to be.
Absolutely. And then as the other side, can they increase stress? Sure.
Just like a child can. Just like your kid can. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, but I think stress reduction is like, this is by far true. Stress is a huge factor in all of our lives and everybody's like day-to-day and mental health and physical health and emotional health. Stress affects all that. Stress is really bad for your health.
Extremely bad for your health. Like smoking, you know, it's terrible.
Yeah. It's, it causes inflammation, generalized inflammation, and causes rises in your cortisone levels. So you're like, excuse me, you're messing up your body. just in a pet is instant relief and medical relief. And you got to keep that in mind that those, cause you don't have to have your own pet. You could find a friend's pet or a family member that has a pet, or go to the zoo, or, you know, go to the dog park. If you like, go volunteer at the animal shelter or whatever. So you can get that little bit of interaction with an animal that's scientifically proven to reduce stress.
You know, here's something that's kind of interesting is like when a pet picks up on your stress levels. Mm-hmm. See, that's the thing, like that animal intelligence, they really can sniff it out. You know, I know our cat can pick it up. If like because we don't really argue at each other too much, but sometimes we will like raise our voice about a third situation and we need a sounding board. And when you've got your husband or your wife there who can just like, and we usually like ask permission, hey, can you hear me out for a second? And you kind of raise your voice about a third thing and you're not angry at, but the cat might misunderstand a little.
Pick up on it.
Might pick up on like, well, you're angry. Are you angry at her? Is everything cool? And just like their behavior, it changes. It
absolutely do.
Really observe that. So I don't know. Maybe you can talk on that for a little bit. Just like pets are observant of our stress.
Absolutely. I think that they pick up on our energy levels very, very well. And this is going to sound woo-woo and voodoo to everybody. And that's fine. This is like, to me, working with animals and working with other animal professionals, your energy level is absolutely coming across these animals. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That you're matching their energy level. They're matching your energy level. What do you want to call your energy? I call it like stress and anxiety. When you have a lot of stress, your hormones start to, you know, pump, your blood starts to pump, your adrenaline is pumping, and they can smell that. They can smell that. They can probably hear your heart rate increase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They can probably sense a lot more of those stress, you know, those reactions to your stress than we can even fathom.
They're like in tune with it, you know what I mean? And in a way that maybe we get distracted by modern life. Like they are really kind of, they pick up on things.
Yes, and it's wavelengths. If you're ever monitoring anesthesia, there's wavelengths for your respiration, your heart rate, and the electrical impulses that are sending signals through your body. Mm-hmm. And that's energy. That's energy. So when we talk about cats and dogs and animals reading your energy,
we it's a real thing. When we're stressed too. I mean, we give like hormonal responses to stress.
And I bet the more stressed you are, your hormones and your smell increases. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You have
we're talking about pets who have way stronger noses than we do. Like they just pick up on stuff.
Absolutely. So they're going to pick up on all those levels of our stress. So if our stress is high, their stress is going to go up. If our stress is low, their stress is going to go down. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the bond, you know, that that communication, nonverbal communication that you're having with them.
When it comes to stress, I think like life's going to get you. You're going to get stressed. And one of the things I really love about having a cat is she picks up on it and she kind of calls me out on it. Now, her language has only a couple words, but she really calls me out on it and says like, hey, why? Why? From my perspective, I eat, I poop, I play. And so my life's easy. And I'm like, I can't just tell her you don't get it. What I think to myself is, okay, she's trying to chill me out because we're family, because this is our space, and it's just whatever's happening sucks, and that's true. But also take a deep breath, you know.
Yeah, my dog is like that too. She'll like if we're stressed out, she'll be like more affectionate and more trying to be with us and lick on us and just. It's obvious to her when we are stressed and she's trying, and you can tell by her behavior, she's trying to distract us from that stress. And I think that's as a distractor alone, pets decrease our stress.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a little bit of stop thinking about whatever you're thinking about, the stress you're out. Look at my cute little face. And that's enough to snap you out of some difficult moments. And I think that's why I like working with animals. I like working with animals because you always have that distractor when things are getting overwhelming or you're just stressed or you have a lot of anxiety, pick up a kitten, pick up a puppy. If that doesn't relieve your stress immediately, I don't know what will. Maybe chocolate.
Maybe.
Really good Belgium chocolate.
Exactly. No, I mean, I think it's really curious and I don't think it's woo-woo. I think it's psychological awareness. I think when we speak this psychological language, behavioral language, you know, I do think, like you said, there's the biological sciences of it too. There's the hormonal response. There are literal frequencies that you're talking about blood pressure. That's So there's actual science to back this up. And I do think some people take it into woo-woo area. And you know what? To each their own. Not trying to judge that. No, but I think here on the Pet Peeves podcast, we are trying to keep things scientific as much as possible, at least from your angle, you know? And I think that is. This is behavioral psychology. This is backed up, you know?
I accept the woo if there's some scientific backup. If there's been some testing and I've seen it.
But the woo is just the vocabulary, you know, because there's science to back it up. You know?
It's just hard to describe it. That's all.
That's fair. That's fair. Mm. Yeah. Next question. Can pets dream? Speaking
of, this is a good one.
Words, can pets dream? But dreaming, again, a lot of scientific background for dreaming. We humans need to dream if we're going to actually rest, have REM, rapid eye movement rest, that makes us a functioning human the next day. I've been sleeping like a baby lately. I actually remember my dreams when I wake up now.
Nice.
And I tell you what, I feel like a champion when I'm awake, you know, and when I'm not sleeping well, I don't remember my dreams. It just feels like a period of time when I pass out between when I'm awake, you know what I mean?
So
do pets dream?
I have no idea. I assume they do, like everybody else assumes they do, because we've seen them dream, be asleep and barking, or be asleep and moving around, and we see that rapid eye movement too. And I think that they do, but I don't know if there's any way to actually prove it. They have brain activity when they're sleeping, like dreams, like we do, and the patterns are similar, so we can assume so. But I don't have no idea. Is it images like we have? Is there language? Is there, are they chasing cats up in heaven? Who knows? I have no idea. How would we ever know if they're actually dreaming or not?
Well, what do we know about dream science so far? Like, I mean, I guess, man, this sounds like a good podcast episode. Can pets dream? Sounds like a podcast episode. And have a psychologist on here and just inform us about, like, or maybe we do a little internet research and discover, like, what is current dream research? Because I'm sure there are people at institutions researching dreams. Because I'm sure we're trying to figure out what makes us tick when we're asleep. I know I've read a few articles in whatever newspaper about dream science. I just can't recall it at the moment. But everybody knows that the dog moving their legs when they're asleep, and it's the running dream, you know, like
exactly
chasing something. I, you know, that has to be something. Or, I mean, Salty will kind of snore, and like the rapid eye twitchy movement, and she's just kind of sniffing. It's, it makes me wonder,
she's into something.
She's doing something outside in her dream, you know? So, but have you noticed anything interesting about like the sleep patterns of your bearded dragon, for example?
No, he just sleeps. I've never seen him twitch or move his eyes or anything. He's just like in a coma. He's just knocked out. Sometimes I'm like, are you alive? Are you breathing?
Yeah. Does he sleep with his eyes open or?
No, his eyes are closed, but he'll like, if you make noise, he'll wake up and look at you and then go back to sleep. So no, I've never seen him do anything that leads me to believe that he's dreaming. But the dogs and the cats, the dog and the cat, yes. I'm not sure about other animals, horses, cows, pigs, gerbils, hamsters, snakes, rats. Yeah. I have no idea.
I know plants can be genetically modified to receive way more sunlight, but most normal plants that aren't genetically modified, even their leaves, many of their leaves will fold. And this is the equivalent of sleep. I'm not saying plants dream, that's too woo-woo. But just like this idea of sleep is something most organisms require. Even fish rest. I don't think fish are on the same sleep wavelength, but they rest.
For sure. My fish definitely sleeps, for sure.
Yeah, both you see that your fish sleeps,
Yeah, but do they dream? I mean, I hope so. I hope they do.
Yeah.
That would be sad if they didn't, especially because I assume that they do. If I found out that they didn't, that would be pretty sad. Then I would be wondering, like, what is the brain chemistry activity going on that's making the dog kick the feet and the cat, you know, move around and twitch your nose, like you're saying?
Yeah.
Rapid eye movement. Like, what are they thinking about? Because I think about my dreams are typically distorted memories or things that I'm thinking about or images that have come into my brain somehow, some way.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Do pets image in their head the same way we do? Do animals have the same kind of memory images that we do, like a photographic type of memory?
Well, I've heard that, like, as far as animal intelligence is something that I like to do some casual reading on from time to time. And it's, and that it was previously kind of assumed that pets, that dogs and cats, that mammals similar to us, but inferior intellectually, right? Mm-hmm. They don't think so much about past and future. That what makes humans really peculiar is our ability to think so much about our past and about our future.
Right.
And it's where we start to get into like, you know, like creation of religion, like humans have religion and, you know, cats,
life and death so and heaven.
Cause we start to think about purpose. These really complex things. Yes. Like
what is my purpose?
Yes,
what is
the purpose of life? Elephants have a version of ceremonial burial, which is fascinating because like we previously thought humans only did. And now we discovered that elephants do. And so like dolphins have some peculiar behaviors that are almost kind of human-esque in this. But when it comes to dogs and cats, they don't think so much about that kind of stuff. So dreams, it's like a synthesis of your past and your present and your brain's kind of going through things. So maybe, you know, this sounds like something we need to research a little bit more.
Yeah, it's interesting. Because I'm thinking about other things that people dream about is like your fears, right? Oh, I forgot my homework, or I didn't study for a test, or I'm naked in front of an audience. And I doubt animals have the same kind of fears. Like you're saying, they're more present. They just want to survive. They're not really thinking about the past.
Maybe they do have
the
same fears. Maybe Salty's freaked out from dogs, you know?
Maybe they are having those, I forgot my homework dreams.
Maybe they're afraid about getting hit by a car. Maybe they're afraid about like all the human noise and stuff like that. You know, they have fears. Yeah,
that's true. Maybe that's what they're dreaming about, their fears, their hopes.
We're going to have to put a pin in this. This is too interesting. We're going to have to, you know, it's, I know that we, prepare before Q&A, but every once in a while we get one that I feel like this one stumped us and I feel like we need to readdress it and
do some research,
you know,
for sure.
When pets come between partners, this is the last question of the day. Okay. And this is not, a question, but it used a question word. And I do think there is a thing of inquiry. Oh, yeah,
this
here.
Is a thing.
So two humans date and they can break up and there's a pet, or two humans date and the pet maybe prefers one or the other and it creates fighting in the home. Let's talk about this. This is kind of a sad question to end on, but it's important stuff.
Yeah. I mean, when pets come between partners, I think there's generally, when that happens, is because one person was more of an animal lover than the other, or the pet was more one person's than the other. And, you know, that could become a conflict for sure. I think that if you call yourself an animal lover, you know, you really have to know what that statement means. You really have to know that it takes a whole lot of patience, like that not all animals are the same, not all dogs, even if the same breed, even the same, you know, species, breed, age, got it from the same person, you know, from the same mother, or even all the puppies aren't going to be the same. And you really have to know that and understand that to say that you love animals. So then you come to be with someone else who has an animal. You have to be super honest with that person. Like, oh, I like my dog. I like my cat. Not so sure how I feel about others. But if the pet is the reason why a couple doesn't work out, I can understand that. I think that you probably should want to be with someone that loves your pet like you love your pet. And that I think that like in my situation, I married my wife when she already had a dog, but I had to make that dog my dog. You know, that dog is now my dog too. It's not just her dog. It's my dog. It's our dog. And if I didn't have that mentality, I think it would be really hard to like just live with somebody else's pet.
I think it's a great point. I try not to get too terribly personal on the Pet Peeves podcast, but I'll share this anecdote because it does assist with this a little bit. So there was about 4 years ago, Kate and I weren't doing so hot. And so there just came a time when I needed to get my own apartment. And it's cool. It's healthy. We're married now. So we, you know, are quite victorious. It's a happy ending
you made
story.
It.
Mm-hmm. But during that time, Kate adopted a cat. And we hadn't owned a pet previously because I talked previously on the Pet Peeves podcast. We just continued to not own a pet out of respect for how much responsibility it takes. Right.
Right.
But she, a cat found her, you know, basically the cat adopted her and climbed into her window. And then when we immediately started dating, even though I got this separate apartment trying to patch things up and work on things, and I met this cat, and that was something. She felt a close bond with this cat. And she told me, you know, after the fact, she's like, yeah, if you weren't going to get along with that cat, I didn't think it was going to work. And it's not that she was trying to choose the cat over me. It just, it says a lot about a person if they can't get along with your cat. And thank goodness, there's another layer to this story. And that is that I had a pretty bad cat allergy. And she, you know, bless her heart, Kate did everything she could. She got an air filter. She got extra vacuum cleaners. We just practiced a lot of cleanliness. And Ricardo, who we've mentioned a couple of times, the betta fish breeder and mutual friend of ours, he encouraged me. He's like, have patience. You will. I was really allergic to cats. And after 6 months, it really comes along. You notice it after three, but after six, it really comes along. And I know with some people, they have cat allergies and they can't get over them. Their body can't adapt. But for some people like myself, like Ricardo, we were able to kind of adapt to our cat allergy. And now I have nothing. Like I can pet Salty and rub my eyes and it's nothing. But first it was awful.
Interesting.
It was really bad. So,
I mean, those are, it's really hard to predict, right? Say you don't know you have a cat allergy and you move in with somebody who has a cat and suddenly you're having these allergic reactions. Maybe you take some Benadryl and it's fine. Maybe it's not fine. Are you going to stay in that relationship? Are you going to try to get that person to get rid of their pet? Those are tough situations and it happens all the time. I would definitely, you know, not move in with somebody if I don't know about their pet, if I'm not close with their pet, or if I don't like pets, or if I have any kind of hesitation.
Yeah.
But I, you know, most people, like you said, will get over an allergy in my experience. Mm-hmm. And if you really love dogs and cats, the allergy is really not going to hold you back. You're going to figure it out, you know, one way or the other, get through it. But if, you know, if you're somebody that you're just looking for excuses to not be with your significant other, the pet is a pretty good one because that's a really long commitment, you know, 15 years most of the time. So I think that relationships probably that aren't working because of the pet have other issues, underlying issues. Because, you know, if you're getting into the relationship with somebody and you really, really love this person, you really want to be with this person, nothing should really get in the way with that. It's like if they have kids, I'm not getting along with my significant other's kids. Well, you got to make yourself get along with them. Mm-hmm. You got to go the extra mile. You got to figure it out. You got to do some research, maybe get some counseling, whatever it takes. You don't just give up. And if you're willing to give up, then that relationship was doomed. Anyway, that's my opinion. Pets coming between people, it's just another thing, another red flag. If somebody doesn't like my dog, I probably don't like that person. Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. So if it was my girlfriend or my wife not getting along with my pet, that would be a real problem. That'd be a real problem.
And you know what? Not all dating relationships have to work out. So if you're listening to the Pet Peeves podcast right now and you clicked on this video because this is something you've been thinking about, you know, it's either I'm not getting along with my partner's pet, or it's your pet and your partner's not getting along with you. Maybe it's not working out. Sorry, but that's okay. Like not every relationship works. It's about being honest with yourself. It's about asking yourself your priorities. You don't have to be overly dramatic about it, but sometimes things don't work out. Sometimes you're not meant to date someone. You can be friends with them, but sometimes, you know, it just doesn't work out. And pets are important and it's okay to prioritize them.
Yeah. And I was going to say, on the other side, though, if you're already in a very happy relationship and then you go get a pet and that pet starts stressing you guys out and it's hurting your relationship, then I understand you're looking for another home for that pet. I have family members who had great lives, normal lives, and then they got a dog. When if it were me choosing for them, I would have told them, don't get that dog. You don't have a life to support getting that dog. But they got the dog anyway. And then they're hitting me up every week for advice. And sometimes my advice is, start looking for a new home for that dog before it ruins your relationship, before it ruins your everyday, because you're already not able. You don't have the capacity to do what you need to do to make this work. And that's not your fault, but don't make it the dog's problem. Don't make it the cat's problem. Find a new home for that dog. Find a new home for that cat. Start looking now. Don't wait till you have to take them to the shelter. Don't wait till you're like trying to pawn them off on somebody who else is going to have a bunch of problems with them. Do it the right way. Take your time. Find a good home for those pets. I don't think people should be getting divorced from a happy marriage over a dog or a cat that wasn't a part of the original relationship. I think that those dogs and cats, you could probably rehome if you put some effort into it.
Very important piece of nuance. Thank you for that clarification. Because that's, yes, yes, of course, yes. I mean, the order in which you do things, the order in which, like, did you get the pet first and then you start dating? Well, maybe that's a reflection on a red flag, like you said. But then if the opposite, yes, of course.
But there's always, you know, it's case by case because you never know. It's hard. I think people don't really know what it means to be a pet owner a lot of the times. Even if, say, oh, I grew up with dogs and I've had a dog. Now I want another dog. Like, you've only had three dogs in your life. That's not a lot of animal experience compared to somebody like me who's had so much more animal experience than you. Yeah. And I'm very hesitant before I get another pet or interact with somebody else's pet or try to pretend like I'm okay with someone else's pet that I met once or twice. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not how it works. Mm-hmm. But people that have very limited pet experience, just their own pet, just their one dog they had, they think they know it all. And it's like, no, you don't know what you're talking about. There's such a variety of ways that this could go. And maybe sometimes, you know, the dog is the one you should choose and not the husband or the wife. Mm-hmm. You know, those things happen too. And I think having a pet is like having a kid in a lot of ways that people's true colors will come out, because that means, like we talked about, you have to be responsible for a long period of time and people break and they show their true colors or they just can't handle that amount of responsibility.
So some of the themes that we've talked about today and some of the themes we've talked about a couple of weeks ago and just kind of on the Pet Peeves podcast these last 5 years is just talking about themes of maintenance, like how, you know, what kind of pet was low maintenance? That was an earlier question in this podcast. You got to talk about, is your relationship too high maintenance? But any relationship takes some maintenance. Any relationship worth its salt takes some maintenance. Can pets teach responsibility? No, you need to be responsible before you take on a pet. Can relationships teach responsibility? No, you need to be responsible in order to make your relationship function. You know, I just think that there's a lot of these questions about pets, not to say that all of us are the same as a dog or a cat, but it's just about interaction with a living being. And at the end of the day, it's about maintenance, responsibility. It's about, you know, what's the animal that gives the best cuddles? Well, we talked a lot about animals that you got to earn it. I mean, it's like humans too. You've got to earn your healthy relationship with responsibility and with maintenance.
Priorities. Maintenance,
you know,
consistency, you know, all that adult stuff.
You're taking on multiple living beings in your home. You know, you gotta make sure you're in order. You gotta make sure that your relationship with all parties is healthy, you know? So
yeah, but if you don't like my pets, you probably shouldn't come over.
But you know, it was important nuance though, too. You got it. Like, thank you for telling that story about your cousins, because I think that's illuminating. You know, absolutely. Like, you had a perfectly happy marriage, then you got a dog. You shouldn't have gotten a dog, you know?
Yeah.
So, and it's, you might even love the dog, but if you don't have time for the dog, it's not your fault. It's not the dog's
causing
fault.
You a bunch of problems. Yeah.
These things happen. It's a bad equation, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, let's close things up. That was a really nice episode. So if you have a pet-related question for Albert that you would like to have answered on the show, please email us to petpeevespodcast@gmail.com. That's petpeevespodcast@gmail.com. And guys, if you're watching this as clips, you know, drop a comment underneath the video and let us know your little nuanced story, your personal story about how you connect with these questions. So we want more questions. We want to hear from you guys. We want to know, like, what's the story of you and your pets? Albert, thank you so much. Pet Peeves Podcast, Q&A, episode 2. We're learning from you, the professional. We're learning about our pets. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Where can the people find you on social?
Hey, check us out at the Pet Peeves Podcast on Instagram at Pet Peeves Podcast, on Twitter at Pet Peeves Pod. You can find me on Instagram at Albert the Comedian or on Twitter at Albert M. Escobedo. And then you can find us on YouTube. Find all the videos on YouTube, all the clips, and then you can find the full episodes of the podcast on your favorite podcast platform. All the good ones: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, SoundCloud, Anchor. It's out there. You guys can find it.
Thanks, everyone. And we'll see
you. Thank you, Michael.
We'll see you in, I don't know, a week, 2 weeks, whenever we can fit in the next one. We'll get some more questions answered for you guys, okay?
For sure. Thanks, Mike.
Have a good night.
See you later, everybody. Yay, yay. Thanks for watching. Cool, cool. There he is. 2 feet of dragon. Angelita the dachshund mix.
Thanks for watching, everyone.
Shout out to, this is Arthur Hamilton. Check out his photography online. This is a great picture by Mr. Arthur Hamilton.